Episode 3 coming in hot. Hut, 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 hut.
Dream TV needs some good ideas, people. Alright? Now, we're dead in the water right now. We've got to get this thing out by the end of the year, and we're sitting here with nothing. We're not leaving this room until... Tanner, wake the fuck up! I'm going to expect some awesome ideas from you when I get to you.
Sorry, sir.
Terry, if I can chime in, you know, we've delivered some good stuff for the game.
Oh, yes, Steve, of course. I forgot about the beautiful moving pistons you and Tammy designed.
Oh, well, thanks, Terry. That means...
Fuck Tammy and fuck pistons! They're industrial technology, Steve. It's a flippin' medieval setting.
I can make it a pulley.
Sounds super scary. Go to your cube, Steve. You've got to be kidding me. Tanner! Tanner!
What? I'm up, sorry.
It's go time, Tanner. I'm waiting with bated breath. Give me your Dream TV feature idea.
Well, I was thinking that... Well, the kids could...
Oh, for Christ's sakes, Tanner, spit it out.
Well, I've been having these dreams. I was thinking that what if when the kids died, that they died softly?
That is the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb?
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
Honestly, I can't believe we've made it 3 episodes. Our work ethic is fucking astounding this time around.
I know, this is a milestone episode. I think 3, anyone can do 1, most can do 2. When you hit that number 3, it's truly an accomplishment.
We're doing Iron Man numbers right now, is what we're doing.
That is an incredibly subtle reference.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 3rd installment in what will likely be 3 installments of the Super Dumb Games podcast.
This has a high likelihood of being the final episode.
If so, it was nice working with you, Tanner, and I'd like to just say thank you to the audience for all their support.
Yeah, huge. I mean, an overwhelming amount of mail.
I couldn't really keep up with the mail, honestly, so it'll probably be another few weeks to maybe even... I don't know, maybe in a few months before you hear back from me. A lot of letters of adoration. The occasional hate mail, I suppose, but only if you think having rage sex with me is hate mail. That's what they really were looking at doing with me, was, you know, just having sex in such a carnal way.
If you look at our YouTube has been getting so many views that we exceeded the amount of numbers they could fit within the viewing window.
Did it roll over?
Yeah, it totally rolled over.
We're back at 0, maybe at 1. It might show 1. It's sort of like back in the days when you'd go on GeoCities websites and the ticker was just going, you know, nonstop. That's sort of what's happening with our numbers on the YouTube. So keep them coming. It's fine. We're not going to break YouTube. I think they just purchased another server.
We have a dedicated room at the YouTube server in North Dakota, especially climate control, just to handle the amount of traffic. It's been a wild ride, people. It's been a Mr. Toad's wild ride.
And the best part about that room in North Dakota is, to our specifications, they have put in a bathroom.
So when we go to visit.
That's right. It's very secluded. It'll make taking a shit there just such an experience.
And all the sound is drowned out by the noise of whirring hard drives. And...
Yeah, it's a lot of beep, boop, 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 beep, boop. It's like playing Simon, I guess.
And there's just piles of dot matrix printouts because there's every time a visitor watches one of our videos on YouTube, an entire sheet of 8.5 by 11 dot matrix paper is dedicated to printing out that visitor. So it's like one, two, and there's just piles and piles of printouts.
You know, the thing I'm most proud of is the fact that in order to keep up with the increased capacity, we implored YouTube, and they obliged, to hire some of the old personnel from NORAD from the 1960s, 1970s. A lot of old geezers who will be monitoring levels of things, looking at flashing buttons, smoking a lot in dark rooms beneath the bunker, things like that. It's really exciting.
Yeah, the one problem, and I want to forewarn everyone right now, is that during Christmas, they're on Santa watch. So it may get a little dicey during the holidays when you're, you know, on your 25th viewing of the Dream TV Double Impact.
People, you are listening right now to the Super Dumb Games podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Chris.
I'm your other host, Tanner.
And this week, I ain't done shit. All right? So...
Get off our backs! We're 3 episodes in! Don't we deserve a break?
That's what I thought. Seriously. I was expecting to get around to playing Addams Family Values. I teased it a little bit last week. That's for the Sega Genesis. But you know that feeling you have when there's something you feel obligated to do, but it is literally the last thing you want to be doing with your life? Take, for example, getting a raise at work, which would be really nice to have. I think we would all like a raise at work. But what if in order to get that raise, you had to suck your boss's dick? I think that's something that I'd put on the back burner of life. So just like sucking your boss's disgusting dick to get a raise, I decided that I wanted to do anything else this week but play Addams Family Values.
Did you play any games this week? Like any game whatsoever? Did you play any? Did you spend 1 minute playing a video game this week?
There was this game, it was free to play, where you have to power up a plane by connecting segments of, I'm never gonna remember, I can't even describe it accurately. It's an educational game, so I was getting my brain capacity increased. Its age range is probably age 2 to 5, so I did incredibly well in the game. On the leaderboards, if you look on there, you'll notice that Butt is the number one player, but has the best score of anyone on there. Better than Jimmy.
They allow 4 letters on their leaderboards?
They allow more letters because they let children play it. So there's kids, you know, nowadays who have long names and, you know, kids named Skyler. They need to see the whole thing and shit like that. So I only went by the moniker Butt.
I remember back in the days when kids had short names like GURP.
It was more guttural noise than anything. It was more the noise that was made by the mother as she squeezed out the melon of a child between her legs.
Glow.
Write that down. Nurse, did you get that? His new name is Glow. How do you spell that? GLORWLL.
Truly one of the greatest things in all of baby naming is the fact that some people are stuck with misspellings of names. I love that there's this moment where, you know, some of us, like, you know, are born to dumb parents. It's just something that happens. But then there's, you know, a small select group of people that then have to live with that dumbness for the rest of their lives in a name that's misspelled, right? Or spelled phonetically, or like, it's so amazing that something so massive and life impacting like the naming of a child can be fucked up by the dumbness of a parent, and then that child just has to live with it for the rest of their lives.
Let me see if I can find the story, because I was just reading it the other day about this woman from Chicago with a really horrible name.
In terms of meaning or spelling?
I think it was more meaning, actually, because it was, I don't know, it's more something that you would get laughed at because of how it sounds. It doesn't matter how it's spelled.
Yeah.
And the whole point of the story was that this lady overcame all odds and has interviewed for jobs and gotten jobs. Oh, I remember. Her name was Marijuana Pepsi Jackson.
Did she change it?
No, that's the thing, is she ended up, she's gone on interviews for jobs under that name. Now she's dealing with the consequences of a mother and father who were stoners, I think, in the 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
And they thought that this would be a clever name. And of course, as it turns out, that was short-sighted. So.
Yeah, I wonder if I would change my name if I got given a dumb or misspelled name. Like, I have a feeling the type of person I am, I wouldn't change it. Like, I'd feel like it was, like, you know, a kind of marker of my background or something.
Right. Like, your name is now Crotch Rot. So what do?
I would just go by CR.
That works, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Crotch Rot. What if, like, beyond Crotch Rot, it was, like, Force Rape was your middle name? Crotch Rot Force Rape.
I think in that instance, because you can't go CRFR.
Right, right.
Like, then you just sound like a radio station or something.
You could go shorten Force Rape to just Force. It could be CR Force.
So, I didn't play minute one of a video game this week. I, dead honest, did not play anything at all.
In fact, you were late to even uploading the playthroughs of Dream TV.
No, I got the first one up in time.
Okay, all right.
More importantly, watch those Dream TV videos.
Absolutely.
I think they're really good. I put the last one up last night and was laughing at it. Part two is funny. Stay tuned during it for the bear encounters. I think those to me are the highlights. Next week, I will be playing a game. You have my promise. I don't think it's going to be an extreme. I think it'll be a double impact. But I went into the Microsoft Xbox store. I sorted for the worst games.
Okay.
Traveled all the way to the bottom of the list and came upon Hunter's Trophy 2 America.
Wait, is this like one of those arcade games where you used to use a light gun?
Yeah.
And bag bucks and,
yeah,
you know, big game.
So I'm going to be bagging bucks and extinguishing elks and destroying ducks and like on Hunter's Trophy 2 America. I don't know what to expect. I've never played a hunting game. I have 0.0 interest in hunting. And on top of all that, this game sucks. I do know that I will be listening to Ted Nugent's Fred Bear while playing.
I, on the other hand, will not be playing something that stupid. I think the game that I'm going to be playing, instead of Adam's Family Values, will be Spelunker for the Nintendo Entertainment System. It's a game that's similar to Pitfall. It began first as a game for the Atari, as an 8-bit game, and then it earned the right to exist on the Commodore 64, followed by an arcade version, and then finally it was ported to the NES. The game itself, it looks like a Donkey Kong-type game, but it's a side-scroller. You're in these catacombs, and there's, like, ghosts and bombs and an elevator that you go down, and you're wearing a helmet.
You know what? I'm starting to remember this game now. I think I played the Atari version.
There's a high likelihood that you played the Atari version. I think it's all going to come back to me once I play the Nintendo version, whether or not I played the Atari version. So look out for that. I don't know if I'm going to do a full playthrough. Obviously, that's contingent on my skills, which we all know are scant at best. So I will try my best on that. But if I don't do the full playthrough, we'll do a, what do we call it? Double team? We'll double team this game?
You don't even know the names of our segments.
What is that called? Tag team? What are we gonna? Are we going to bookend it? What are we doing? I'm just throwing out any sexual term for a three-way that I can think of. So anyway,
I think that's it. Sorry, folks.
First segment disaster. Let's see how far we can bring this thing off the rails into the ground. Let's bury this podcast.
Stop and start in the mall. What? Drop it! October 1st, 2013. That's this fucking week. Get excited. The latest in the hit Hello Kitty series. Travel Adventures with Hello Kitty. This motherfucker is coming at you from publisher Bergsala Lightweight LLC. Yes, they have an LLC. This is a professional operation. People in this organization drive Sebrings. Sometimes they put the top down. The developer, Idea Factory. I don't know them. I don't know what they do. I do know they do Hello Kitty games, and they are for the 3DS. I just found out, following up earlier conversations, that the 3DS, in Japan at least, is the top-selling system. It just beat the Wii.
Wow.
For all-time sales. So that kind of goes with that. Who's playing the 3DS? Fucking everyone!
Except me.
Yeah. So this game, the copy says, join Hello Kitty and her Sanrio friends. So apparently, like, Hello Kitty has a pack, like a gang in a way, of various other characters.
Isn't Sanrio the company that does the licensing and stuff?
Yeah, so they have a whole, there's a whole set of characters. Like, I'm looking at them, there's a frog, a penguin, a smaller cat, and then a black cat. Here's what confused me about Hello Kitty. They don't talk, right?
I know fuck all about Hello Kitty.
There's no cartoon.
To my knowledge, well, first, I had no idea that the first appearance of Hello Kitty was 1974.
Holy shit.
Can you believe that? That was before we were born. And it is now a $5 billion a year product.
It's huge. They have entire stores in regular malls that are just Hello Kitty stuff.
What? Adults are making this part of their consumption. I don't understand it. Tanner, what am I missing? I've lived 32 years on this planet, and I don't want to live a day longer until I understand what the fascination is with Hello Kitty.
It truly is fascinating, because to the best of my knowledge, and corrections department, correct us, I don't think there's a cartoon. These aren't characters. They're just icons in the true meaning of icon. Like, they're a thing that you recognize, and that's it. There's no, like, when you look at Mickey Mouse or whatever the fuck, you're bringing some narrative and a voice and a sense of personality to the thing. But Hello Kitty is just a fucking round circle with two dots in it and some whiskers. Like, and people form a connect. I don't get it! My head's exploding!
I can correct you on whether or not there were alternate forms of media. There was an anime, but listen to this. The first animated television series was Hello Kitty's Furry Tale Theater, 13 episodes long, 1987. Next installment, 1993, another 13 episodes. 1999, 16 episodes of a show. 2005 and 2006, airing 52 episodes of a show called The Adventures of Hello Kitty and Friends. By my count, we're looking at, what, 26, 39 plus 52, that's some number under 100, of episodes of this anime series. This is not $5 billion worth of my time.
And I would argue that most people that like Hello Kitty have never seen any of that stuff. They just see the image.
It's only had under 100 episodes worth of a run versus an anime like, say, One Piece, which has had over 600 episodes since it debuted in 1999, and something like 12 feature films made of it. That, to me, is a franchise worth, I guess, well, it's not worth investing in because you'll die before that you ever get caught up on it. But I don't understand the mania behind Hello Kitty, because there hasn't been enough of a cultural permeation, for me anyway, via the normal venues that I would look for, like music and TV and things like that. Instead, it's just something people slap on a sticker of, or they buy the backpack. What does it say about you as a person? What about Hello Kitty defines you? I don't understand. Help me.
You know what Hello Kitty is like? If Hello Kitty, I imagine the large majority of their consuming population are women and girls. There's the same phenomenon with bros. With you, I don't know the name of this brand, but I guarantee everyone's familiar with it. I think they make paintball and motocross shit, and it's like the logo looks like a wolf's head.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone does. Like, I think the whatever company it is maybe starts with a T or something, and they somehow form the T into like a wolf's head. But there's dudes who just like see that logo and like, that is fucking wicked. You know, and then they just like rip off the Monster Energy drink sticker and slap that one on, you know, and they're like, this is me. It's like the no fear phenomenon.
Right.
There's nothing to it. It's just an icon that people, well, fuck all of it. Next up, September 26, 2013. This is a date that has already happened. We're talking about shit in the past, but it's too good to pass up. Train Simulator 2014 by publisher RailSimulator.com, platform PC. This shit is rocking the world. Ladies and gentlemen, this delivers everything you love about trains with the exhilaration of speed, stunning graphics, a variety of trains, real-world routes, and challenging assignments. Whether you love driving trains, creating new routes, or just watching the landscape fly by, your journey starts with TS 2014. This has got everything you would want. Experience the super modern London Faversham high-speed route featuring the stunning London St. Pancras station and sleek streamlined Southeastern Class 395. If that doesn't wet your whistle, alternatively, take charge of a Dash 9 at the head of a heavy freight train across the mountainous Donner Pass. Listen.
I know I'm looking forward to the Hamburg to Hanover route. That's in my top five routes.
I love that these fucking games exist. These, to me, are the definition of dumb games. And I watched every goddamn video I could get my hands on of this game. And they are, pause the podcast and just go to railsimulator.com and watch all of their video content. They produce the most self-serious shit about that. They make trains seem like fighter jets. And but they have no footage. Like, they don't have a barrel roll or a missile being launched from a wing. So like,
cuz you're locked in on tracks.
So what they do is they're like, get in the driver's seat. And then what they show, like, at the beginning of one of these videos, like, this puts you in the driver's seat of this video. And there's like techno. And then the next cut is they show a window with a wiper going. and then there's like a quick jump cut to like the train doors opening and like a dude with a briefcase getting in. It's the best.
Experience the elements.
Yeah.
As the windshield wiper takes out the rain.
Oh, it's fucking incredible.
How in depth can you get? Because I know with flight simulators, you know, you can take a look at what the yaw is like and other terminologies. But on a train, I'm being dead serious, you're fixed to a fucking track. So
yeah,
the course is the same every time. The trains might change, but the players are the same.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what you're doing with the game is you click start, you choose your track, I imagine you push a button to turn the train on, and then basically you just take a nap. And like, in 5.5 hours, you've gotten to your first destination.
Here's how you'll get me to play this game. I need a multiplayer component where I get to be the man in the briefcase. I get to decide whose train I'm going to ride, and I need to figure out who has the best train for partying on. I want a conductor who gives me the best experience when I'm on the London to Faversham high-speed route.
This should be a massively multiplayer game.
Yes, you'll start guilds that involve, like, I only ride Conductor 2014's train because he throws a fucking party on that train. I've never spent 65 minutes of my life in better company than when I am on Conductor 2014's train versus some guy named like William Ragsdale II. You know, I won't ride his train because he doesn't do anything exciting whatsoever on his train.
And he serves off-brand crisps. It's just, it's a horror show. All right, so next up. So caught up in you. Top Sizzlers! These are the top stories. The hottest of the hot. It doesn't get much hotter than Xbox Fitness. This, ladies and gentlemen, is launching with your, yes, your X-Bone. If you get a gold account, you get access, for, I think for a year, to Xbox Fitness, where you have a selection of trainers, including, Chris, your favorite, Jillian Michaels, my favorite, Tony Horton, Tracy Anderson, Sean T. Who are these people?
I think they're on, like, Celebrity Fit Club. I think I've heard their names used in conjunction with that. But where is my Richard Simmons?
I know.
If I'm going to do this, I want to sweat to the oldies. I want to have my deal-a-meal out in front of me so that I can take a look at my card deck, figure out what's on deck today for meals. I don't want Jillian Jacobs or any... Secondly, is 38 Special going to be a part of this game? Because I'll buy it.
So here's what you get. Here are their three top features. Muscle mapping. See which muscles are most engaged by the power, force, and transfer of weight in your body.
On behalf of all fat people in the world, you will not see much mapped muscle.
It'll just be blank. Then it also detects micro fluctuations in your skin optically to read your heart rate. This sounds impossible. Call me crazy. When I gear up for a workout, you know, I'm wearing a leotard, like a half shirt, a mesh half shirt with Bo Jackson on it.
Headband.
The largest fucking socks you've ever seen. They almost reach the knees. They bunch up at every point of articulation. And a pair of high tops that...
The tongue is so fat.
It looks like, what you know, when you go to the supermarket and just for the fuck of it, the butcher puts out a beef tongue. It's like these high tops. It's like the Moby Dick of Oxen's tongue is in these high tops.
So like Babe the Blue Ox, you could have just went right back to Tall Tales.
So when I'm working out. You cannot read my pulse. I've made it impossible because I've got to gear up. Okay. Last segment. Fucking fan favorite.
Which one isn't a fan favorite at this point?
This shit's coming off the wire, and guess what? It's coming off hot. Oh my god. So we teased this last week. IGT and 20th Century Fox consumer products soaring into G2E 2013. With debut of game series based on James Cameron's Avatar, TM, Avatar's in all caps, it got serious. So when you start looking at the PR Newswire, you start realizing when you put game into the search, easily half of all the results are casino products. And I guess the big thing in casino products now is like fusing arcades with slot machines. They've done this with James Cameron's Avatar. And from what I can tell, they try to get you seated, like in a special seat in front of a slot machine. Then they throw familiar imagery at your fat, disgusting face while you're slurping on a Long Island iced tea and destroying your life and the lives of your family. And you just click buttons on a screen that's got blue people on it, and there's a giant screen above you that's like, take me away, Avatar! You know, like, I don't know. It's the dumbest shit!
It's funny that casino games, the evolution has been pretty quick, actually. I think for about 30 years, casino games just, they were stagnant. It was just garbage games. And then they became more high profile by adding games like you said, stuff with brand recognition. For instance, Wheel of Fortune. When you go into a casino and they have like a Wheel of Fortune slot game or one of those games that's, it's not just a slot game that you play, but other people will play it and then they spin the wheel and everyone has a chance at winning stuff. Those are much more prevalent now. And it's interesting because the people who go play casino games, I imagine if we were to draw a Venn diagram, they do not fall in the same category as gamer proper. The overlap isn't there.
Yeah, it's totally different.
And yet these people, because they're spending so much of their lives at a casino, they need the stimulation to be up. So in order to do that, they have to bring in things that might be recognizable to them outside of a casino. But instead of bringing in like a family picture or the picture of their grandkids or something that they should recognize, because they have neglected that aspect of their life for so many decades now, they have to bring in some bullshit thing from Avatar that maybe they'll recognize the, you know, the blue hue of that skin because it's a reflection of the peaked pallor of their own skin as they die a very ignoble death inside of a casino outside of the sunlight and spectacle of other human beings.
Yeah, I wonder, do casinos have policies in place to like remove and dispose of dead bodies that like die on slot machines? Like, do they have like a special team, like, you know, a siren sounds and a team in jumpsuits comes out and like they've got like a giant shovel?
If you've ever seen the movie Taken, where they bid on girls that they're going to, I guess, fuck, I don't know. I don't do that. I don't go that morbid. But I'm up in a secret room usually when I'm at the casino. It's me and a bunch of other high rollers. And we sit in this sort of clandestine area, shrouded in darkness. And I sit in a very nice recliner with a button on my right and then a drink on my left. And I take bets based on footage of the floor of the casino on what motherfucker's going to die next. And then when they collect the body.
So there's a whole meta casino game happening.
Exactly. They take the body. It goes into, if I win the bid, it goes into a storage room of my choosing where it gets put on mothballs. And then I usually have it stuffed, put on a wheel of some sort. And then for parlor games at my own house, we spin a wheel of dead bodies. And if it lands on Greg, the fat guy who died last Tuesday, you know, you might win a gift basket.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is your news. In my shed, I keep a dozen or so
files of lead and bombs from a glow. I like your bed. The plastics I make all day long melt our hearts together. Ladies and gentlemen, before we move into our final segment, I'd like to reach into the community bin where I sift through the cesspool of suggestions, adorations, textual catcalls, general fan worship for Tanner and myself, and see what's shaken in our community.
The community bin.
That's right.
What is this community bin? Is it like a plastic tub that usually holds gift wrap?
Well, as you can hear, as I sift through it with my hands right now, it sounds like somebody put some used condoms in there, possibly some rotten food, maybe some feces. It's really a proper bin. It's a trash.
It sounds like you're just sifting through the trash.
Exactly. So I'm going to see what's shaking in the community. And the lucky winner this week is, it looks like this comes from a certain EA, which I believe stands for Endless Analingus. Endless writes, Turok, also known as Turok Son of Stone and Turok Dinosaur Hunter, was originally written as a Western comics character, but gained more exposure in the 90s when Valiant purchased the rights. After being shoehorned into the Unity crossover and later an issue of XO Manowar, before being granted his own series complete with Chromium cover.
Which were the best. If you were into comics in the 90s, those Chromium covers, they were like cardboard stock with raised bits. You know, like right. They had relief and then usually some foil of some kind, glowy bits.
It was the golden books of its time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he goes on to correct us, because I think we had some issue with where was Turok from in the Turok universe. So apparently Turok was a time-displaced Native American, but really What Native American hasn't been displaced, whether via time or geography or sheer genocide of his family? Who hunted super intelligent velociraptors? Who killed his family or some shit?
Wait, where... Why, how did they get super intelligent? That seems important.
You'd have to look that up. This is coming...
Someone needs a correct endless anal lingus.
Or endless, if you're listening, please write in and tell us how these velociraptors became super intelligent.
Because we don't have the internet.
I refuse to Google that. I will Google endless analingus, but I won't Google super intelligent velociraptors. So these super intelligent velociraptors, they killed his family or some shit. EA doesn't know. He says this is where it gets a little muddy for him. It ran for 53 issues, almost as much as Hello Kitty. Valiant was later purchased by Acclaim, which paved the way for another Turok comic, complete with video game tie-in, which is where this dovetails with our show. Also of note, Acclaim also produced a game of the Shadow Man comic, which just recently became available for download.
Yeah, I remember that one. That's a dumb game. That'll have to be on the... Both Turok and Shadow Man, I think, will have to be covered at some point.
We'll put the link to bleedingcool.com that EA gave us. And then he also provided us with some terrible Turok trivia. And this trivia states the following. Hayden, Annie, I'm getting close, Christensen.
So damn close.
So damn close. This goes back to episode one of the podcast, if you haven't listened to that. Please stop now. What are you doing, you fucking idiot? Go back to episode one. Hayden Christensen and his brother were reportedly huge fans of the Turok game franchise and optioned the film rights to the property back in 2002. I don't know what else I can add to that, he says. I know what I can add to that. How did Hayden Christensen ever become powerful enough to option any film rights, ever?
The image of him playing Turok is almost too much to bear. Like, it's just two horrible tastes that even taste worse together.
So that's your community bin. Take a slush around. Send us over your bits of gossip and tell me how much you love me. You know, stuff like that.
So we've got another time trial for you this week. This is where one of us comes to the table with a super secret topic of debate in some fashion connected with video game culture. We throw 10 minutes on the clock and go buck wild, discussing tangentially anything we can remember about that topic. It's basically a release valve for crippling nostalgia that both myself and Chris have.
That's right.
This week, I'm going to throw up a topic. Get the clock ready. Video game rentals. Now, this is a thing of the fucking past that is almost completely gone. Like, you've got Redbox for movies now, which is, and Netflix in a way that sort of approximate the idea of video stores. But I feel like game rentals in particular, Gamefly doesn't do it. And I feel like people aren't grabbing games all that often to rent anymore. So, Chris, do you have any fond memories of renting video games?
I alluded to it in the last episode when I mentioned that my brother and I would rent the 3DO or the Sega CD. And we exclusively rented games for a long time because it was a lot of money to actually purchase a game. And being the connoisseurs of games that we were, sometimes it just didn't make sense to buy some of the dumbest games that were coming out. You didn't want to get duped by a game, even though we didn't want it to happen too often. So we would look at whatever game guide we had, which was of course in magazine format, and we would take a look at what was on the horizon and figure out our strategy of what we were going to save up for and then go to the store to rent it.
That's way more thoughtful than I was. Like, the way I used the rental store, I was almost, it was a discovery engine in a way.
Right.
Because I had Nintendo Power and I'd get a GamePro every now and again. But other than that, I didn't know shit about what was coming out.
It did not mean that when we got to the store, we automatically rented the game we had prepared ourselves to rent, because sometimes there would be a game box cover that just sold us. That was the game we were going to get instead. So there's plenty of times where we went to the store thinking we were going to get one thing and we walked out with another.
And if it's a new release, like a big release, there was a whole system in place, I feel, that like I knew when new games would hit the shelves, and I feel some places you could almost reserve,
right?
Or you'd have to get there early. There was a whole, I can't remember the machinations of it, but I do remember checking return bins.
Right.
Hoping that someone just recently returned a game, like on a Sunday.
Speaking of the new releases, there's one in particular that immediately came to mind, and it was huge. I don't know if it was as huge in your tribe of kids, but for us, it was a huge release. It came out in 1993, and we actually did put a reservation in at the local Video Castle. It was a mom and pop place, and that was for the 1993 mega hit game X-Men. For Sega Genesis.
No, that wasn't... I mean, the arcade machine was huge.
Right. It was huge, and so too at the time was the X-Men cartoon.
Yeah, and coming off the heels of the famous X-Men number one with the Jim Lee cover that sold like 10 million copies or something.
It was a whirlwind of X-Men shit back then.
Yeah.
And so we made sure that we were one of the first people to get it. And I remember going into the store, they only had a select few copies and they had reserved them for us. We took it back to our house and we played the game. And, well, I don't know if you remember, the game was fucking hard. It was not something that you would just beat in a matter of a few hours. It was difficult. But it had this element in the game that I had never seen in a game before, which was where it broke the fourth wall. Did you get as far in the game as I did?
No, I don't even know that I played that.
Okay, so there was this level in the game, and I'm looking it up now because I would have never remembered it, but it was called Mojo's Crunch. And after you defeated Mojo, the next step in your mission was resetting the computer. And we toiled through this level trying to figure out how the fuck do you reset this computer. We're running back and forth. There's nothing that indicates how to reset the computer. And we had to return the game unbeaten because we could not figure out this one thing.
Yeah, always crushing.
Fast forward X amount of years, and here was how you defeated the computer. Here's how you reset it. Resetting the computer was a literal translation to mean you have to press the reset button on your Sega Genesis console before time ran out, and that's how you beat the computer. Your Genesis was the computer, and to beat it, you reset the game, which for anyone else in the world would mean, like, I'm going to turn off the game and lose my save state.
Yeah, that's a mechanic that's been used subsequently in the Metal Gear series. Like, you had to unplug your controller. I think you had to reset the computer. There was an enemy called Psycho Mantis, and there was some famous boss battles where you had to, like, actually start fiddling with your hardware to defeat him.
Who does that to 11-year-old kids? I don't know this shit, and my dad isn't savvy enough where I can call him and go, hey, Dad, do you know how to beat Mojo? My dad doesn't give a shit. He's just...
And at that time, there was no recourse. If you didn't know someone who's beaten it, or you didn't have a game guide or something, you were fucked.
That's the end.
So I remember, like, in particular hard games, there were kids who were famous for being masters of them. And they would teach us about the game and show us their, like, tricks that they had developed. It was incredible. It was very organic in a way. Did you ever rent a game and have someone else's save on it?
Yeah, of course.
Because that was always weird. It was like intercepting a transmission from some other tart, you know?
It's like listening to the flight recording on a plane that's crashed.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you just assumed the kid was dead now.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to bring up, too, was, see, I think you might have went to, if I remember correctly, I think the place that you frequented was a bit more of a chain.
It was a mixture, but yeah, most of my game renting was done at chains, but we did have a local store, but they were more mainly movies.
Okay, well, after Video Castle shut down, we went to this place that no longer exists. It's right over by this place called Comics Corner, and inside of this place was this gigantic man. I mean, not penis wise, but body weight wise, who owned this place with his mother, who chain smoked in the back, and they would give us shit when we went in there to rent. It was this strange community that existed there. It was this fat guy, I think his name was Francis. We would go in there and he would get into arguments with my brother based on what my brother had read in the most recent issue of some game magazine. And they would argue about whether or not Phantasy Star 4 was going to be a good game or not, or something like that. And I wish I had my brother here, although he has horrible memory when it comes to this stuff. I don't know how much he remembers of this stuff. I would be watching playthroughs on a TV screen on the wall or whatever, or I'd be browsing to, you know, possibly re-rent an RPG that we hadn't beaten in the 2 days that they gave us to fucking beat an RPG, which was bullshit. And he would be sitting there arguing with this guy. It was a very strange scenario. Did you have the local color, you know, that character who kind of added an atmosphere to the renting experience?
It definitely, I mean, because I frequented Comics Corner, those guys were characters. And they weren't as contentious, but there was always a process of judging that went down.
Yeah.
And all those geeky places, that was kind of just how it worked. Like, they were the arbiters of taste, and depending on what you chose, you could always see they were kind of evaluating
right
what you were selecting. I remember, first of all, I love that point about like trying to beat an RPG in 2 days because that's rentals. It was a time trial in and of itself. Like, you had, the clock was burning. You knew you weren't going to rent it again. You know, fuck that, because there's other games to be rented.
Right.
It had to be finished. And I felt like, especially in that era, it was so rare that you could even finish a game. It was just masochistic.
Right.
But then, like, at the tail end of video game rentals, because I think they peaked in maybe the mid-90s, late 80s.
I would even argue that, like, Blockbuster had their whole, what was that called? Game Crunch? Game Zone? I don't know what it was called.
Yeah, that ruined it. Fuck that.
They would allow you to rent a game for, like, a week, I think.
Yeah, it started losing its mystique in some way. But at the tail end, I think this was late 90s, a non-chain shop opened up, and they, like, their thing was, all we do is rent games. And they created, like, game stations, and they were trying to host tournaments and stuff.
Oh.
And I remember being so excited about it, but it was too much. Like, it didn't, the great thing about renting games was that it felt almost subversive and subcultural. Like, it was a section of a larger store, heavily competed over. Like, that mystique was what really drew me to it.
I wish something like that existed. You know, I wandered into a Blockbuster Games near Dayton, Ohio, about a year ago. I was in there with a buddy of ours, and we walked in, and it was so sad. What it has become is, instead of renting games, what they try to do is because they need foot traffic in there. So they try to host tournaments, like you were talking about. And it's often with games that I just don't give a shit about, like Call of Duty or you know, those like first-person shooter games that just don't do anything for me. And they're trying to drum up support from these kids. I felt bad because these kids have no outlet. They live in fucking Dayton, Ohio, you know, so they have nothing going on with their lives at all. And they never will. They're going to just go do some fracking on a hillside, ruin their environment, and then drink poison water. That's what they're going to do with their lives. So to escape that monotony, instead, they would go up to this Blockbuster and play these Call of Duty tournaments. And it seems like it's the same kids owning each other and shit like that. I don't remember. I know I would go into these game stores and I would play games just to get a taste of it. There was never really tournaments like that. Did you guys have tournaments that you would sign up for and then like kids who were
no
good at that? See, that all died for me with arcades. When arcades died, so too did the tournaments that you would do outside of your house.
Yeah, we would do the tournaments we had were just at people's houses and shit.
Yeah.
I think I didn't start the timer. We have to be over 10 minutes.
God damn it.
Yeah. I could talk about fucking renting games forever.
Oh, yeah. And if you guys have rented your own games, you know, send that shit over. I'm especially interested in people's local stories. You know, if you rented from a chain, your experience was probably similar across the board. But I really am curious about what it's like. It's almost like this anthropological study of some kind.
Yeah.
Like, what was life like for you in your local area when you went to rent a game? Did you have the game shop owners who were contentious, who wanted to make you feel bad for what you were renting? Or did you have kids who dominated everything in that area and, you know, you couldn't get a good rental if you wanted to. Just shit like that. I'm curious if that existed.
You know, one of the reasons why I really disliked, like, the whole switching to, like, Game Crush or whatever the fuck it was called was because those chains, clearly, they were in the business of, let's stock a shit ton of new releases and sell off as used anything that's a little bit old. But at the old mom and pop type stores, those games would stick around. I mean, they were invested in those games. So you had a full selection, and the games were so worn. You know, the booklets were all fucked up.
Yeah.
the games had a million saves on them and didn't work properly and were scratched, and they'd been there for 5 years. You know?
Booklet smelled of just like an ashtray because it had been in so many people's houses.
Yeah.
So, well, I guess that concludes another episode of Super Dumb Games. This one sucked. I don't know why you stuck around so long. But thanks for that. I mean, hey, whatever. If you get a chance, check us out at www.superdumbgames.com. From there, you can click on the iTunes link and subscribe if you haven't already. We're also on Twitch TV, www.twitch.tv/superdumbgames. Where else are we? I hate doing these plugs.
Just go to the website.
Just fucking, what are you waiting for?
Dumb games.